This is a reading of the collection of lectures entitled Love and Its Meaning in the World by Rudolf Steiner. This is the prologue entitled The Mystery of Love and is taken from the book Christianity as Mystical Fact. Plato's Dialogue on Love, the Symposium, describes an initiation. In this initiation, love appears as the herald of wisdom. If wisdom, the eternal word of or logos, is the son of the eternal world creator, then love has a motherly relationship with this logos. Before a bright spark of the light of wisdom can flash forth in the human soul, there must exist a darker longing, a tug toward the divine. We must be drawn unconsciously toward what later, raised into consciousness, will constitute our highest joy. What appears in Heraclitus as the daemon, the higher self, is thus united with the idea of love. Footnote, quote, the spirit works in human beings, but it works in them in a special way, out of the temporal. It is our special characteristic as human beings that something in time works like something eternal, that in time it leads and enables like something eternal. This characteristic makes us at once like gods and like worms. We are placed midway between God and animal, but this leading and enabling power in us we may call our daimon. The daimon is what in us strives to go beyond us. As Heraclitus strikingly puts it, quote, a person's daimon is his or her destiny, unquote. Daimon is here used in the Greek sense. In a modern sense, we would say spirit. From Christianity as Mystical Fact, Chapter 2, end of footnote. In the symposium, people of the most varied kinds, with very different opinions on life, speak of love. The ordinary person, the politician, the scientist, the comic poet Aristophanes, and the serious poet Agathon. Each has a view of love appropriate to their life experience. The ways they express themselves reveal the developmental stage of their daimon or eternal self. One being is drawn to another through love. The manifold variety and multiplicity of things into which divine unity is diffused, strives toward oneness and harmony through love. Love, therefore, has a divine quality, and each person can understand it only to the degree that he or she participates in this divine quality. After these speakers, who represent various stages of maturity, have declared their views on love, Socrates takes up the discussion. He considers love as a cognitive being, a thinker. For Socrates, love is no god. Love is what leads human beings to God. Eros, love, is not a god for him. God is perfect and therefore has beauty and goodness. Eros is only the longing for beauty and goodness. Eros, therefore, stands between human beings and God. Love is a daimon, a mediator between the earthly and the heavenly. It is important that when he speaks of love, Socrates does not claim to give his own thoughts. In this regard, Socrates says he will tell only what a woman has given him as a revelation. Thus Socrates has come to an idea of love's nature through the art of prophecy. Diotima, the priestess, woke up what, as the daimonic force within him, would lead Socrates to the divine. She initiated him. This feature of the symposium speaks volumes. We must ask, who is this wise woman who awakens the daimon in Socrates? We should not think this is mere poetic machinery. No actual physical wise woman could have awakened the daimon in Socrates' soul if the force for such awakening were not within the soul itself. We must therefore seek this wise woman in the soul of Socrates himself. But there must be a reason why what brings the daimon to existence in Socrates' soul appears as an outwardly real being. This force cannot work in the same way as the forces we can observe in the soul that belong to it and feel at home there. We see that it is the force of the soul before it has received wisdom, which Socrates represents as the wise woman. It is the maternal principle that gives birth to the Son of God, wisdom, the Logos. The unconscious, active force of the soul is presented as a feminine element that allows the divine to enter consciousness. The soul, still without wisdom, is the mother of what leads to the divine. This leads us to an important idea of mysticism. The soul is recognized as the mother of the divine. With the inevitability of a natural force, it unconsciously leads human beings toward the divine. The world of the gods is born in the soul. We look upon what we ourselves create in the form of images as our gods. Footnote: See Christianity as Mystical Fact, pages 17 through 21, and a footnote. But we must advance to another idea. The divine power within us, which is active before we create the images of the gods, must also be transformed into a divine image. Thus behind the divine appears the mother of the divine. She is none other than the original power of the human soul. Beside the gods we place the goddesses. Consider the myth of Dionysus, the son of Zeus and Semele, a mortal mother. Semele is struck by lightning. Zeus tears the premature infant Dionysus from his mother's womb and hides him in his own thigh until he is mature. Hera, the mother of the gods, stirs up the Titans against Dionysus. They dismember the boy. But Pallas Athena saves his still-beating heart and brings it to Zeus. He begets his son a second time. This myth gives us an exact description of a process that occurs in the depths of the human soul. Like the Egyptian priest who instructed Solon about the nature of a myth, one could say, when you tell us that Dionysus, the son of a god and a mortal mother, is dismembered and then born again, it may sound like a fable, but its truth expresses the birth of the divine and its destiny in the human soul. The divine unites with the temporal, earthly human soul. As soon as the divine element, Dionysus, is revived, the soul experiences a tremendous longing for its true spiritual form. The consciousness appears again in the image of a female divinity, Hera, and becomes jealous of that birth from a superior consciousness. It stirs the lower human nature, the Titans. The child of God, still immature, is dismembered. It is present in humanity as a dismembered materialistic and intellectual science. But if enough higher wisdom, Zeus, is active in human beings, it cherishes and cares for the immature child, which is then born again as the second son of God, Dionysus. Thus out of science, out of the dismembered divine force in humanity, is born the harmonizing wisdom, which is the Logos, the Son of God, and a mortal mother, the transitory human soul, striving unconsciously toward the divine. We are far from the spiritual reality in all this, if we recognize in it only psychological processes, and merely mental pictures of such processes at that. In this spiritual reality, the soul does not merely experience something within itself. Rather, it is completely disconnected from itself, and participates in a cosmic process that in fact happens outside itself and not within it. The end of the prologue.